Welcome to this week's Consider This. I'm your host, Joe Clark.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We are happy to have you along. Hey, you know, we get to have a lot of fun on the radio. And for some reason or another, you know, people who write books and do incredible things like to present their wares on the radio. We get a lot of people who I'm able to meet through several different masterminds that I'm a part of at Slots Group, where we have some of the smartest IRA, tax attorneys, CPAs, and other financial people in the world, or at least in the country, I should say. The Genius Network out in Scottsdale with Joe Polish's group that I'm proud to be a part of, and Strategic Coach up out of Chicago and Toronto I've been a part of for 19 years. And a lot of my friends are entrepreneurs and business people, and we're able to bring them on, other authors, to be able to talk about programs that are going on. And Angie, as you know, is all things questions.
Yes.
She's responsible. So when you call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001, and you do one, the first thing, you call and say, hey, I want to come in and talk to Joe or somebody on the advisory team. She's the one that's going to walk you through that, tell you what you need to bring, make you feel comfortable about what's happening and what's going on. She's also the one that interviews the authors, that says, okay, you either do or don't make the cut to be able to be on the show. So, you know, our job is to be as educational as we can. We want to give you things to consider, but at the same time, we want to be informative and give you things that matter to life. So whether that's talking about demographics, whether it's talking about how to deal with a problem child or an aging parent, we cover a lot of different things.
Yeah, we want it to be something really relevant to our listeners, but also, you know me, I like something that's going to be also interesting and a little bit entertaining.
A little bit different, a little
yes.
bit off the thing. So this week, we have four different podcasts that you're going to hear. And if you want to hear the whole thing, remember, yes, you're dissonant, you heard me right, it's a podcast. This is our radio show, and you're going to hear four different bite-sized pieces of that. But if you want to hear the whole podcast, it'll be uploaded to our podcast that you can find. These are all about 40-minute interviews. You're only going to hear a chunk of each one of them on the show today. But you're going to hear a little bit about culture. You're going to hear about how to teach kids how to invest. You're going to hear the difference between technical and fundamental and narrative type investing. And you're going to hear about what we like to call My Life and Wishes. When something happens to you, how to best be prepared. I think you're going to truly enjoy the show. These are great people. I know everybody on the call reasonably well, and they are good people, genuine at heart, with your best interest in mind. So give us a call, 800-928-4001, and in the meantime, enjoy the program.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they worry in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
So good to talk to you and pry into your personal life and your struggles. I'm pretty excited about that. Are you excited?
And I'm always excited to talk with you. And I, you know, I don't know if anybody enjoys talking about their struggles, but I think it's worthwhile to share with other people. You know, we live in this world of Facebook where you see everybody's great days and nobody's bad days. And the reality is we've all had challenges. And I think sometimes just coming clean helps.
Is it weird that I do enjoy talking about my struggles?
No, it's not weird.
I do.
That's why you are. That's why you're extremely successful at the things that you do. We don't, you know, you don't do things like the average person walking down the street, Anna.
Now, do you think you do? Because I would turn that back on you and say you don't either.
No, that would probably be an unfair statement. If you're an Enneagram person out there, which I'm a big fan of. I'm an 8, so I'm a challenger. So I don't live by a lot of rules, which, if you know, again, about the Enneagram, that means it came from childhood stress that I didn't even understand it came from. And I'm a 10 quick start. So when you combine those two, I don't live in a normal, here's how life ought to work kind of box.
I don't know about the Enneagram thing. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Will you explain what that is?
Yeah, Enneagram. It is a church-based program that helps us understand that we have 9 different personalities, that we tend to focus on one of those personalities, and almost all of it stemmed from our childhood. Where you ended up taking on a different role. My wife is a helper. So there's things that without the Enneagram to me look like she's being apathetic, which has led to a lot of problems in lives. I have to make decisions very quickly and lots of them. And so I have a hard time dealing with people who don't make decisions. And that's just part of her nature, part of where that came from.
So then over those years that you were a professor, you start your company.
No, I started a company back in...
Actually, you started a company way before.
Yeah, I started the company in 97.
And what role would you say those struggles, the alienation as a kid, not being able to do college, what role would you say that had in your success in building that company?
Well, it has success and failure because when you feel like nobody else cares about you, you don't really care about anybody else. And, you know, I met my wife in January of 88. People laugh and ask her to confirm this, but it's true. She asked me to marry her in March and we got married that November. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to be married. I knew at some point in time and it all worked out. And, But I wasn't a terrifically good husband. I worked 80 to 100 hours a week. I really didn't care about anybody else. I wound up in counseling. The doc looked at me and said, "Let me get this straight. You're working because you want to provide your wife and your young daughter a better life." And I go, no. I'm doing this because I'm building a company. And, you know, how selfish can somebody be in the way they said that? But it was exactly how I felt. And and I worked, all the way through the tech wreck. And then in 2002, it all kind of comes home to roost. And, you know, my wonderful wife says, "Hey, there's got to be a better plan than dealing with somebody who's absorbed by a company and not by his family." And, you know, obviously, since we've been married for 31 years, we worked through that. But that alienation, you know, creates some problems. And it really, I mean, if you really want to get to the... where it got ugly, I guess, in my life, and we still have challenges that we deal with it from it. You know, I manage money for people. At the end of the day, I get paid to make sure that your accounts grow and are used correctly. And we've got $460 million now that we're responsible for. Well, in 07, I mean, people treated me like, and I accepted that I was the Superman, like a cape around my shoulders. And when 08 hit, and I couldn't explain it, when you have systemic risk, it was not systematic risk, which is how a market normally behaves. When you see that happen, bad things happened. And Anna, I was awake for 32 days with no sleep. The things that I have done to apparently adrenal glands and everything else from the stress from that period of time apparently will be with me forever. And I think all of that came from me trying to be more than what a mere mortal is capable of so that I would be picked to play Foursquare back in fifth grade. If you want to know the truth, I think it goes back to that.
Ah, that's so well said. And so did you fall apart and then go to counseling? How did that get solved or how is it getting solved?
That's probably my relationship with, I'm going to tell you, your listeners may not like it. You may not like it, but it's, if you remember in 07, the iPhone first came out and mm-hmm. I had, in my Suburban, when I was teaching at Purdue, it was 93 minutes each way and podcast just started. I started my podcast in 07 when you could start them because of an intern at Purdue who knew how to do them. And,
wow.
And so back then in 07, you couldn't even really, is from what I remember, buy Christian music on iTunes. And I came downstairs one morning. I had to drive to Lafayette. And frankly, I'm not sure I've ever said this publicly, but I'm not sure I care if I made it or I didn't make it. I just knew that I couldn't listen to CNBC for another 90 minutes. And I went online. I used to do a cooking show. And I went online and I downloaded 4 cooking shows. And when I got into the car and I plugged them in, they were actually 4 sermons. They were from Francis Chan and Irwin McManus and another guy out in Seattle. And I drove to the office, and the market was horrible again, but I didn't feel as bad. And I found myself driving back and forth 3 or 4 days listening to stuff that I never intended to even download, and started seeing things that I'd never seen, even though I'd made that drive for 10 years of my life. And it was just, it was a remarkable thing. So I never went to counseling per se over it, but I've been very introspective, if you will, over why I do the things that I do and how I behave. I wound up preaching in a few different churches. So that's kind of where my escape route came from, I guess, if you will.
Wow. And by the way, the most popular podcasting genre is Christianity by a mile. You know, I always assumed it was comedy or some news or something like that, but it's Christianity.
The number of shows that are out there that are done by Christian-based businesses that don't market it that way would even amplify that. But anyhow, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. So you start to feel better as a result of this spiritual connection that you, you know, develop even stronger. And then how does that play into the continued success? You bounced back from 2007, 2008. When did that happen?
Well, I sort of bounced back. What happened, there's a reason why most of my life they've called me Big Joe. And so 2008, 2009 happened. By the time, as you put it, I bounced back, I was up to 438 pounds and knew that something had to change. And so I went through the surgery process. And then in 2012, we went to Nairobi on a missions trip and climbed Kilimanjaro. And I think climbing Kili with my brother and getting to the top was my heart and my mind saying, all right, it's time to go again and to really get back at it. Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This Program. I am Joe Clark, your host. This is a special addition to the radio show. We do these on the podcast, so if you're hearing this, you're listening to Consider This Program. We appreciate all of the things that you write, say, questions that you submit, and of course, subscribing to it certainly helps us get this message out to other people. So Consider This Program. Today we have a special guest in the studio. You'll be able to hear a condensed version of this on our radio show, Consider This Program. But today we're going to just spend the next 30 minutes or so with Grant Sullivan. Grant is one of our financial planners in our Indianapolis office, also works up in the Anderson, Indiana office. He was one of the students that went through the College of Financial Planning that I was fortunate enough to be able to teach at Purdue. Did that for 7 years, and Grant has been a graduate of Purdue for 8 or 9 years now, so it's amazing how time flies. But I am 52, he is not, and he has a better handle on how to deal with young people that are getting started and young parents that have kids. Mine are 22 and 27, so I'm a little bit out of that scoop, but I'm looking forward to hearing Grant's message about how I should work with my grandkids as they get a little bit older. They're not born yet, for the record, but as they get a little bit older, what we need to be looking for in their financial future. So with that, Grant, welcome to Consider This Program.
Thank you, Joe. Glad to be a part.
Glad to have you, buddy. Glad to have you on the team. How many years you been with FEG now?
Oh, that's November of 16 is when I moved my practice over. So it'll be 3 years this year.
And then you had 4 or 5 years before that.
Oh my gosh, spent 4 or 5 years in the 401k qualified planning business, and then was doing individual planning before that.
Wonderful, wonderful. And how long has it been since you were at Purdue?
10.
Yeah, I was afraid. I was afraid of that because if you've been out for 10, yeah, that's bad. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and lay out the show. Where do we start, Grant?
So let's start with habits, Joe, because again, whatever book you read, when it comes to teenagers, young adults, children, a topic that's always going to come up is habits. It's a strong word. It's a powerful word. Without proper rooting or rutting, if you want to say that for treks in a road, without those habits, saving becomes very difficult later in life. And the most successful parents that we see are the ones that set up habits early on.
So I will tell you, as a podcast junkie and a learner, I spend 10 hours a week minimum reading and listening to leadership and other kind of stuff. That I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that's because it's my responsibility. Mm-hmm. There's 28 people on our team, and there's no way for me to keep up without getting that other insight. And I will tell you that habits is probably the big buzzword that's going on right now. The number one book on the Wall Street Journal list is Free to Focus by Michael Hyatt. Mm. It's about habits. James Clean's about habits. They're almost all about habits. And in fact, folks, habits make up about 40% of our lives. So we talk about getting rid of a bad habit. Mm-hmm. You really can't. You have to replace it. So one thing that I would ask you, Grant, and just to talk about is, let's say my kids are 15 and I didn't do what you're going to tell me to do between 3 and 12. Is it too late?
No, it's not, Joe. It just becomes a little harder because, like you said, habits, they have to be replaced. And when they get to 15, this is where it gets hard, is when leading by example as a parent, most of the time our teenage children aren't necessarily looking at us as an example. In fact, they're fighting us most of the time. But you can still lead by example, and you can still encourage to save. So when they're 15 and going on older, it's not too late. Just understand it's going to be a little bit of a tougher job.
All right, so let's go back. So what age are you advocating as a parent in a perfect world that they start?
If we were in a perfect bubble, Joe, and we were going to talk about saving for children, I would start as early as 3. Most professionals will say 5 because kids are starting to understand the concept of money. I say 3 because they're still willing to do what you say, and you're creating those neurological connections with forming habits, just in anything. So in a perfect world, just go 3 to 12. And when those early habits are established, lead by example. And here's what I mean by that. If we're going to set up a habit system at 3 in a perfect world, we're going to use Ball Mason jars.
Good old Ball jars.
Good old Ball jars. For our friends up in Ball State, that's what your university is named after.
So for those of you that are listening, and you've probably heard the word, you've probably heard of Ball jars at some point in time, but they were based in Muncie, Indiana. Natural gas was discovered just outside of Muncie. And so all of the glass making that we know came from Dunkirk and Muncie, and that's where the ball jars were, where my grandfather ran the loading docks for 52 years.
No kidding. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's a big part of our family legacy. But so I'm ready to hear about the ball jars.
Absolutely. So let's take a little bit of history. Let's put them in action, right? Still have great uses outside of holding liquids or grain. They can hold money too, Joe. And so for our family members, start with 3. And why is 3 the magical number? We'll get to 4 in a second because it's something that we focus on here at the Financial Enhancement Group. But 3, one for spending, one for saving, and one for giving.
Okay.
Children naturally understand those 3 concepts. They understand giving. So when the kids are young, they'll probably put a little more in the giving side. We've seen that from our families. But there's a 4th jar that most parents often miss, especially when it comes down to when they're reading habit books like The 7 Healthy Habits of Young Children or Teens by Covey. You know, there's a 4th one we miss, Joe, and it's the largest, as you know, you spent most of your career talking about, the largest eroder of our wealth, and that's taxes.
The least understood largest erosion.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so start with 3, and then over time as they get mature, we'll add the 4th darn taxes.
If this not, and just saying this to you as young parents, if you're listening to this, because life will change, but for most of, if your kids are as successful as you want them to be, their largest line item budget will be their taxes. And so to ignore that is an absolute mistake. So we didn't do the ball jar system at home. Mm-hmm. I wish I had of, right? But I very, very much like the idea of of the save, spend, and give. And once a month a year, I do my best to only use cash. You know, at 52 years old, after doing this as long as I've been alive, I do my best. And it's very, very difficult. But, you know, just to come back to that realization that that piece of plastic is not as cheap as it appears to be. And so that getting kids to understand currency, to play with coins, you know, to watch that happen, I am all in favor, Grant. I think you're on the right track.
Well, and Joe, I love that you participate even in that, trying to use cash, because, again, this goes back to leading by example. So it's one thing to have the 3 or 4 jars out for your children to participate. There's a totally separate element that adds fuel to this fire when you participate. So for a lot of our families, it is. It's not normal for us to go and just throw a $5 bill down for something. We want to use plastic that's in our wallet. And I'm guilty of it. I rarely carry cash. So just for everyone knows, my wife and I don't have children yet. Once we do, this will be implemented. Naturally, it's something we've talked about for a very long time.
And I will hold you accountable to that.
Please do. Please do. So leading by example, so you're going to have 3 or 4 jars of your own. So your children will have jars and you will have a jar, because by setting up that example of, hey, here's what I've earned this week, here's what I'm going to put in my save, spend, and give, your children will naturally want to do it even more. Now, there's a key word I just used there, Joe, and that's earned.
Okay.
We find that the habits are built successfully. It can be done if you just hand them the money. But again, psychologically, we find that it's far better when the children earn money.
Grant, thanks for being part of the show.
Love being here, Joe. Thank you.
And thank you for being part of the team, buddy. Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host. Happy to have you along. We have a great interview for you today. Good friend of mine, Jason Corman, creator, president, in charge of Gaping Void, a wonderful, wonderful company. Jason, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Joe. Pleasure.
Glad to have you. So I've just got to start here. You know, when we have somebody on the show, I will tell you that Angie is quite the snoop. If you have anything that you want to hide in your life, you really don't want Angie trying to track you down. She's very, very good at this stuff. So those who have listened to my show for a long time know that I had a deep, long-seated passion for wine, and I found it very interesting, or Angie found it really interesting, that you helped build or did build La Crema, which is a winery out in Sonoma County. Can you tell me about it?
Sure. So it was a project that I had taken on I was actually 24 years old, and La Crema was at the time known as La Crema Venera, and it was located in Petaluma, California, southern Sonoma, and was a little winery with a warehouse, built in a warehouse in an industrial park, and actually had gone to bankruptcy a few months before I was introduced to the guys. And to make a very long story short, I wound up buying the assets from Bank America, and then relaunched it as La Crema. And it was one of those things that the timing was right, and we had a different approach to the world, and you know, sort of took off from day one. We relaunched, and in the early '90s, sold the winery to Kendall Jackson, who now it's sort of the jewel in their crown. In fact, a friend of mine was texting me the other day because they just celebrated the 40th anniversary of La Crema, and really isn't 40 years. La Crema isn't really 40 years old, but you know, hey, a little bit of rounding up. But they had a big celebration last weekend in Sonoma, and so that's what we did. We sort of democratized this the idea of barrel fermented Chardonnay and Pinot Noir back when we could do great quality for $10 a bottle. And people loved it, and it was—it's now probably, I guess, a couple million case brand for Kendall Jackson and Portland, really their main business, as far as I can tell. To make a very long story short, we launched a bunch of campaigns using blogs and using various social media channels to engage large groups of people. And back in, this was 2005-ish, really, four, five, six. And back then, social media was really in its very early stages. Most of the people in it were tech people, and we wound up making friends with a lot of people at, you know, very large tech companies. So we had friends over at Microsoft, HP, Intel, you know, sort of the biggest tech companies in the world. And so our campaigns were really designed around engaging people around what they do with wine, not about the usual conversation about how the grapes are grown and which way the slopes are faced and what temperature the wine was fermented at. And my perspective was that all that stuff was boring and really didn't differentiate, you know, the product from anything else that was out there. So conversations we wanted to have were really about what people do with our wine and how they have fun with it and how they connect with other people using it. So we sponsored something called the Blogger's Freebie, which now is very common, but back then we were the first people to do it, where we basically said, look, if you're a blogger and you want to have a party, a dinner, you host your dinner, we'll send you a case of wine. You post some pictures, talk about on a blog post where you discuss what the dinner was about, and take some photos and put it up. And in the connection with that, we used to send out these prints, and you hold the prints up and take a photo, and off you go. Anyway, so when we launched, we had literally hundreds of people doing these dinners, and we made friends with some folks at Microsoft, and there was a guy named Steve, who is a marketing guy based in the UK, who had run a dinner and loved what we were doing. And Hugh drew this cartoon for him, which became known as the Microsoft Blue Monster. You can Google it. And what it basically said, what we learned from hanging out with Steve, was that there were lots of people at Microsoft who who joined the company to have impact in a global way with a big organization that was making a difference in people's lives. But they hated the sense that back then, if you remember, Microsoft was not really loved by anybody. They were sort of the evil empire. It was before we all realized that Google's really the evil empire, right? or Facebook, right? Back then it was, Microsoft dominated software world. And so they were highly frustrated. And so we created this thing called the Blue Monster. And it just said, Microsoft : change the world or go home. And it turned into a meme inside of Microsoft. It turned into literally hundreds of blog posts about change happening at Microsoft. It turned into an article in the Financial Times, half page, about how a little winery in South Africa was changing the culture at Microsoft. It turned into like this broadly felt shift that needed to happen within Microsoft, right? And it was all informally done. It was all bottom up. And eventually bubbled up to the top, to the highest levels of Microsoft. And the point was, when we saw that, we went, okay, that's interesting, right? Like, if we can figure out a way to reverse engineer that, so we can, based upon data and process execution, right, recreate that shift, those changes, those conversations at scale in big companies, then that is a really interesting form of change management. And that is really how Gape and Void Culture Design Group got launched. Awesome. It was a complete accident. And then for the last 10 years or so, we've been reverse engineering through process design, how you capture the sentiment of organizations, align to a future state, create a system of beliefs that will deliver people to the to the future state they want to have. All right, so we do that now for the U.S. Air Force. We just finished a big project at Edwards Air Force Base. We're about to launch a big project for the Global Strike Command, and those are the guys who have all the nuclear arms. So we really all need to make sure that their culture is great.
Amen.
We have projects still running at Microsoft, a lot of diversity and inclusion work. We do a lot of healthcare. We do, we do a lot of higher ed. So MIT Sloan, USC, University of Washington, so University of Miami. So, so we help entrepreneurs, right? So it's really, we deal in virtually every segment of the economy, and it's all about connecting people to It's not really about engagement. It's actually a new tool for people to lead and manage their businesses.
I love it.
And so that's what we're doing. So it's one of those those weird kind of narratives around, like, you start doing one thing, you see an opportunity, you create something new and fresh unlike anything else, and then you scale it. So that's what we're doing.
We tell people, though, Donald Miller is making me change this, that, you know, what we do is take care of people who don't want to worry about their money so they don't make inefficient financial decisions that lead to frustration and devastation. And sure. his argument is, people don't know on the outside what care means. And, you know, so we work real hard internally to talk about that. But, you know, we kind of shortened our message to, we reduce financial regret, because it's simpler, it's easier and clearer. But the culture internally remains the same.
Yep, I'm with you.
Buddy, I appreciate great. Everything you've taught me.
Thanks, Joe. No, it's a pleasure. And thank you for the opportunity of chatting with you. And I'm grateful that we were able to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that was Jason Corman, CEO, president of GapingVoid.com. If you want to get in touch with them, at GapingVoid on Instagram and Twitter, you can go there to find him. Jason, you have an outstanding day. Thanks for being part of the show. Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host. We're going to have an interesting conversation today. As you know, one of the five critical elements that we look at in life ends in legacy planning. So we talk about retirement, which we call your life after work, the tax planning that needs to be done annually, your investment playbook, how you take care of the investments. Fourth, of course, is life happens, the good, bad, ugly of life. And the last is legacy planning. Today, we're going to have a conversation with a friend of mine, John Braddock. And the reality is, it's probably a little bit of a combination of the last two. It's some of the bad and ugly of life mixed right along with your legacy plan. John has done some interesting things in his life, but just to give you a sense of how important this is, I lost a dear friend 3 years ago and told him pretty specifically what he needed to do. Turns out he did about 85% of what I said. And it only cost a little over $2 million in estate taxes, let alone frustration and everything else. The bottom line is, none of us go to bed expecting to die that night. And as my seventh grade science teacher told me, he gave me this round wooden coin called a round to it. And he said, Joe, most of your life, people are simply not going to get around to it. This conversation with John is designed to help you figure out some things that you need to get around to and actually complete and do. So, John Braddock, welcome to Consider This Program. How are you, my friend?
Doing very well. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, very, 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 very honored to have you. I like what you see and what we do. Your company, or at least your website, is mylifeandwishes.com. Some interesting things to go there. So, John, tell us a little bit about your mission and why, what the genesis of it was.
Well, to simply put it, my mission and my vision since my father-in-law passed away in September 2013 is to help at least 1 million families avoid the struggles or the massive scavenger hunt for information that we had to go through. And so my life and wishes, we say your life stored and secured. We help people easily plan and organize, then digitally protect all of their critical information, because our lives are so complex and disorganized today with documents, information, passwords scattered everywhere, making it impossible to quickly access those things in an emergency or, in fact, in the event of the passing of a loved one.
Yeah, so and if you've not been through this, friends, I will tell you, it is much more complex than you think. As this is my 31st year in the industry, and so I had a lot of people who started with me in their 50s that are now in their high 80s, and their families are coming to me saying they're so glad that they were here because their aunt or uncle passed away working with another advisor somewhere else. And it is really, really crazy to come up with some of these documents. People who have three and four different wills, trusts that aren't funded. So, man, I really appreciate the mission and the vision of helping 1 million families.
It's interesting that when Ted, my father-in-law, passed away, unexpected, on his anniversary, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Kind of a heart-wrenching time. They lived a mile up the street from us. And what ensued next was something we had never experienced in our life, you know, from going to the house where you know, the police were still there, the emergency responders. And the first thing they're doing is they're asking us questions. It's like, well, what funeral home should he go to? And we're like, I don't know. There's like five in town. And those were just the beginnings of trying to, on the front end, just honor whatever we think his wishes would have been as far as, you know, religious ceremony, which church, which pastor do you want to officiate? And then, you know, once you get through all that, then you're left with trying to sort everything out and find things. And he was 88, lived a mile up the street, and it took us nearly 1 year to finally find, track down wills, insurance policies, safe deposit box. We found the key, but we couldn't locate the bank that it was literally.
You know?
And so my aha moment was, my gosh, if something happened to Michelle and I, our children, who are all just, you know, some still in high school at the time and the others just in college, they wouldn't have a clue. They wouldn't know who my attorney is. They wouldn't know where our retirement plans were. They wouldn't know if we had group life insurance. And the list goes on and on and on. And it was like, wow. And people have been dying for 300,000 years.
Yeah, you'd think we'd get around to this at some point in time, but you are so right in terms of what it is. So I know some people listening to this would say, so what's the difference between this and a trust or a will?
Quite simply, you know, the trust or will is a legal document that specifies what happens and where things go, hopefully to avoid probate and all kinds of other issues. But what's not listed is, let's just go to the low-hanging fruit. If I were to pass away today, would my family know where all the documents are located? Would they know where, if they're in the safe deposit box? Would they know if they're in a desk drawer? Would they know if they're at my office? Would they know who my attorney is? Would they know who my accountant is, where the plans are? But then taking it a step deeper, would they know how and where to shut down my Facebook, my LinkedIn, my Twitter, Amazon Prime, all the bills that I pay, which are done online? I don't get bills in the mailbox you know, out front of the house anymore. They're online. Would they be able to access my computer? Would they know the password? And when we start to think about all of our digital identities, it becomes a nightmare.
So
the other thing,
go ahead. No.
The other thing is some of the little things that, it's funny. No one really cares about mom's china right now, but when she passes away, the two sisters are both going to argue that mom wanted them to have.
Right.
You know, and it's all the little things that just aren't spelled out for a lot of people. And the other sad truth is that it's only about 50%, I think, of the population actually has a will.
Hey, you've been listening to Consider This Program. Our guest today, John Braddock. We were discussing parts of the good and bad and ugly of life, our fourth critical element, as well as a little bit of your legacy planning. And he used the trademark, so this is John's word, not mine, death etiquette. But on air, he did give me permission to use it. So, you know, we have this recording in perpetuity. But John, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to be on here. What the best way for them to get a hold of you if they have questions, I assume, is just on your site, mywishes.com?
They can go to mylifeandwishes.com and click support, and there's an email button there.